This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. As we all know, there are three branches of government, but you might not know this. Republican Dan Winslow has served in all of them. He was a district court judge, he was chief legal counsel to Governor Mitt Romney, and now he's a state representative from Norfolk. And these days, he's also running for the U.S. Senate, hoping to fill the seat vacated by now Secretary of State John Kerry. Between now and the special Senate election next June, we'll be hearing from all of the candidates, more than once, we hope. And today, Dan Winslow, Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate, is good enough to join us. And welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you in the studio.
Well, thanks for having me here, Anthony.
And listeners, what's your question for Senate candidate Dan Winslow? What issues matter to you? And if you're a Republican in this very blue state, do you think Dan Winslow can help lead the state GOP back to political relevance? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Dan Winslow, first off, the big challenge in this special election for some of you has been to get those 10,000 qualifying signatures to get on the primary ballot, and the deadline is tomorrow. I understand you've reached it.
We have. We announced yesterday that we have collected nearly 25,000 signatures of Massachusetts voters, and Massachusetts unenrolled or independent voters, as well as Republicans, can sign the nominating papers. It was our first challenge. We used this challenge to build out the field team from the Berkshires to Barnstable County. We supplemented a paid staff with just fantastic volunteers statewide, literally hundreds of people out in the cold and the snow and the rain to collect signatures. You know, Mother Nature wasn't cooperative with us, but thankfully the voters were. And there's a real excitement, it seems, in the field. There's a real energy, I think, that people want to see good choices on the ballot, and I'm thankful to be able to have my name on the ballot.
All right. Well, it's a compressed race, not a lot of time, but it should be an exciting one. Let's start with some of the issues that I'd love to talk to you about. And the big one is this freight train barreling down the tracks in the U.S. Senate, the sequester. It looks like it's going to hit Massachusetts particularly hard with cuts to things like NIH grants, defense programs, for instance. Do you support just letting sort of these blunt cuts take their course, or if you were in the Senate, would you be advocating for another approach?
You know, this sequester is actually one of the reasons that I'm running for the United States Senate. Washington isn't working. We have a culture in Washington where both sides, and there's blame to go around, simply are content to point fingers in the other direction, and finger pointing isn't problem solving. So as a member of the legislative branch, whether in the federal government and Congress, the U.S. Senate, or here in Massachusetts, we reflect our priorities, our values, through our budget decisions. And this kind of a blunt instrument doesn't reflect our values. I support, for example, higher education. I support research. These are core parts of our Massachusetts economy. So the sequester is particularly bad for Massachusetts, but it's also an example of what's wrong in Washington. And that's why I'm running, to change things in Washington.
Well, one way that someone running for the Senate might change things, I mean, you used the word finger pointing from both sides, and it seems like the two parties are entrenched in their positions, and that leads to this paralysis, essentially. Are you willing, as a Republican, to run and say, here's what's wrong with my party, here's what we have to change in the Republican Party?
Well, I have a record in the legislature of bipartisan problem solving, and I think that's what we need more of, frankly, in Washington. Last year, I voted with the Democrats in the state legislature 55% of the time. I voted with the Republicans 98% of the time. We have that much overlap between Democrats and Republicans in Massachusetts, and it's no accident that when Democrats and Republicans work together for the benefit of their state here in Massachusetts or for the country, good things happen. So it's no accident that Massachusetts has a balanced budget year after year, or that we have a higher education system that's the envy, not just of the nation, but of the world, or that our health care, our health sciences, and our research, our innovation economy is an example for the whole globe. And I think we need to have more of that in Washington, more problem solving. And I have that experience when I was the governor's chief legal counsel during the last fiscal crisis. We had $3 billion hole in our budget, and we didn't have political power. We're Republicans in Massachusetts, but we did have innovation and new thinking and the willingness to roll up our sleeves and work hard and to work across the aisle as well to find answers to the problems that confront us. And we can do that in Washington as well.
You know, we were speaking yesterday about the sequester to Linda Bilmes. She's a lecturer at Harvard, and she made the point that some of the younger legislators on their way to Washington who get training at the Kennedy School people want to see a change, want to see this logjam broken, but it's some of the sort of older, established politicians in Washington that are more and more and more entrenched. So I guess my question for you is, let's say you're in the Senate, would you be willing to go to Mitch McConnell and say, hey, we got to do things differently? And here, I mean, again, I'm sort of coming back to this question. Are there specific things where you would say to your own party leadership, we got to change, and here's what we have to change?
Well, you know, it's interesting. As a Massachusetts Republican, we're a different breed from the national Republicans, and I think that that's actually empowering in Massachusetts. You know, we already know who the Democratic nominee is going to be for this seat. It's going to be an entrenched congressman who's been in Washington, D.C. for years, somebody who, in my view, has been part of the problem. And if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. We're not, I submit, going to be changing things in Washington, D.C. by sending the same people down to Washington expecting a different outcome. And for that reason, because if I'm fortunate enough to win the primary on April 30th and obviously the general election on June 25th, if I am representing the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I'll be focused on that, not the people of Kentucky or Alabama or the folks that might represent different factions or points of view. I'll care about Massachusetts and America first, and that's my goal. I have a record of doing this, by the way, in all branches of government. As a judge, I received national recognition for solving problems and innovation. As the governor's chief counsel, we dove into the fiscal crisis. We solved it. As a legislator, I have a strong record on job creation and promoting growth in our state's economy, and that's what I hope to do in Washington, D.C.
Let me ask you a little bit about the challenge of, you know, I referred to Massachusetts. It's a very blue state. That's not exactly a news flash, but Republicans do have a very, very strong headwind in this state. A couple of years ago, Scott Brown seemed to catch lightning in a bottle and win that special election against Martha Coakley. Is there something that you take away from his victory that might help, I guess, what anyone would call a long shot candidacy just because of the way Massachusetts is?
Well, see, I disagree about the sort of the blue state, red state analysis. The fact is that most voters in Massachusetts are independents, unenrolled voters. They've not cast their lot with either of the parties, and independent voters can also choose which primary they care to participate in. So in my primary, April 30th, I'm going to be looking to both the Republicans as well as the independents to take the Republican ballot and vote for me. What we learned, I think, from the Scott Brown race is this, that even though we have a one-party monopoly in many respects, it's not foolproof. It's not, you know, all-powerful, because they get sort of fat and happy sometimes. And we've seen this. I think we'll see it in this coming race that, you know, remember the old, you know, I'm Avis number two, we try harder. Well, I'm a Massachusetts Republican. I know that I've got to have better ideas, work harder, work longer, raise as much money as I possibly can to get my message out. But the beauty of this, the beauty of being a Republican in Massachusetts, is that I know I can win the front stoop debate. I know that by focusing on those things that we have in common, and we have so many more things in common than we have that divide us, by focusing on jobs and the economy and the debt and deficit, and really to make sure that we lay the groundwork for economic prosperity for our children and future generations, those are the things that we have in common, regardless of where in Massachusetts you live or what political stripe you might have.
What of the, if you look back at sort of, of when Republicans have done well in Massachusetts, they were part of a breed of Republicans that seemed to be disappearing, at least nationally. Sort of where would you put yourself in the sort of arc of the sort of development of the Republican Party? That is, once upon a time, the sort of typical New England Republican, someone like Bill Weld, conservative on fiscal issues, big tent Republican, kind of laissez-faire, even liberal on social issues. Is that where Dan Winslow dwells, or where does he dwell sort of in that continuum?
Sure. Well, I'm a proud member of the party of Lincoln, and these are the common principles, by the way, that regardless of what branch or flavor or wing of the Republican Party that we hail from. I mean, we have common core values. So fundamentally is freedom, a respect for the individual, a belief in individual responsibility and opportunity. And so while the issues may come and go and people may respectfully disagree on particular issues, I think that these common core values of Republican philosophy unite people. And I think that they actually had broad appeal in Massachusetts among the voters. My record as a state legislator and in government service is somebody who's socially progressive and fiscally conservative. So, for example, I was endorsed in my my first run by the Gay and Lesbian Political Task Force, the Political Caucus. I was proud of that endorsement. I was endorsed last year as the only Republican endorsed by the Sierra Club, for example, on environmental issues, because I'm strong on environmental issues. I'm strong on respecting people to live their lives. At the same time, I received 100% rating from Citizens for Limited Taxation, and I was endorsed twice by the National Federation of Independent Business because of my pro-jobs, pro-growth policies. So I think that my view is that I reflect really the mainstream of Massachusetts voters, and I hope to be able to make the case to Massachusetts voters why it's good to have two-party representation in Washington. We have a monopoly in Washington for the Democratic Party. That's simply not good for Massachusetts. You know, if the majority changes, of course, that's one thing, although we have a 10-vote margin in the Senate, so I don't think that's changing anytime soon. But we absolutely have a majority in the House of Representatives.
But let me just push back on that. Let me just push back on that issue, because it seems to be, I mean, whether you're Republican or Democrat, it seems like one of the reasons that you've got a paralyzed system there is because the Senate is divided. And if you send a Republican, you're only going to make it a little more divided. I mean, couldn't you make an argument to Massachusetts voters, look, the more Democrats you send down there, the better you might actually get that supermajority and make things happen in the Senate?
And not with a House that's a majority of the Republican Party. I mean, we'll just divide, we'll just change the point of the divide. So I've worked well with the people of both sides of the aisle. I think we need to have a Republican in the delegation to be able to help run interference for Massachusetts in the House of Representatives, which is under majority control of the Republican Party, and I expect will be for the foreseeable future.
We're talking to Dan Winslow, a Republican state representative and a candidate for Senate. You can join the conversation, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Dan Winslow, as a state rep, you've promised never to support an increase in tax burden while you serve. That sounds like a no new tax pledge. Would you take that into the U.S. Senate?
The tax pledge that I took when I ran for the state Senate legislature was because I knew the state budget well enough, having been a judge, having been the governor's chief counsel. I knew that there were literally hundreds of millions, if not over $1 billion, of waste and fraud and inefficiencies. And so I was confident that there would be no need to raise taxes. And I'm still confident, by the way, of that today. I would like to exhaust the sort of the waste, fraud and inefficiency debate before we start turning to new tax revenue in Massachusetts. So I'm not a big fan of new taxes, even still. Mm. On the federal government, that no taxes pledge has been portrayed as including loopholes. Well, frankly, I think there are some loopholes that we need to get rid of in the federal government. I'm not a big fan, for example, of corporate welfare unless there's some public policy metric that advocates why it's good for the country as a whole. But to me, it's something that needs to be a debate that we need to have. My view is that the best revenue is revenue that comes from growth. So before we talk about any kind of tax increase, I want to make sure that we've exhausted any reductions in fraud and waste and inefficiency. We need entitlement reform, for example, in the federal government. 64% of our spending is entitlement spending in the federal government. I want to talk about those kinds of reforms. And then let's talk about growth and jobs and income and opportunity, because those are revenue opportunities that we're leaving on the table.
But at the federal level, would you, for example, join all those folks who would be your Republican colleagues who signed Grover Norquist's pledge not to raise taxes under any circumstances?
No, I would not. And the reason for that is that the Grover Norquist federal pledge is different from the state pledge in that it counts the loophole closing as a tax increase. I disagree with that. I think that if anything, we need to flatten the federal tax rate and to make it fairer across the board. And I think that taking loopholes into account is something that we need to revisit.
All right. Well, let's take some calls. Listeners, we're talking to Don Winslow. Dan Winslow, he is a candidate for Senate, a Republican state representative from Norfolk. Let's go to Elizabeth, who's calling from Newton. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air with Dan Winslow.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I just have one question to ask him, and I would love to have either a yes or no answer. How do you stand on gun control? And I'll take my answer.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. I have a feeling it's going to be more than a yes or no answer, and Dan Winslow, I'll give you some latitude there.
Well, as a former judge, I would say objection, because you can't answer that question yes or no. How do I stand on gun control? But I'll do my best. I have an A-plus rating from the Gun Owners Action League in Massachusetts. That's the sportsman group.
That's the NRA, the local NRA affiliate.
Well, and the NRA has given me a B rating nationally. And, to me, I think we will be having a debate in the upcoming Congress about gun control and gun violence. I was actually at a meeting in Holyoke Holyoke this past week of all sportsmen. And I started the meeting off by saying, okay, who here wants to reduce gun violence? Every single person in the room raised their hand. And so in the upcoming debate, if I'm fortunate enough to be elected to the U.S. Senate, I want to ask three questions. Would it have prevented Newtown? Will it stop kids from killing kids with the illegal guns in Boston? And does it respect the individual freedom under the Bill of Rights of the Second Amendment? And if the answer is no, no, and no, I'm not terribly interested in inefficient or something that doesn't solve problems. I'm interested in having a reasoned, fact-based debate. So,
let me ask you a yes or no question. Assault weapons ban, good idea or not?
We can get into it. It's not a yes or no question. The reason for it is that, you know, the definition of what is an assault weapon, so to something that is a military style, but it's actually functionally a rifle. You know, this is why I want to have a fact-based discussion about gun violence, and not just gun violence, by the way. My focus is the mental health system. I believe that, and this is a national problem, that the mental health system is really where some of the solutions lie on this debate, because the mental health system in America, and it's true across the board, state by state as well as federally, that the mental health system is, you know, chosen to mainstream people. And in fact, we've just mainstreeted people. So we have so many people in our prisons who are functionally becoming our mental hospitals. We have so many homeless people who are mentally ill. And that's not compassionate. It's not humane. And I want to solve the problem. And the problem has to do with that, think that larger focus of mental health.
Let's go to Mohammed, who's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Mohammed, you're on the air.
Hi, it seems to me like Mr. Winslow is dancing between the raindrops because, you know, on one hand, he's asserting that most Massachusetts voters are independently leaning at the ballot box. So if that was the case, why can't he just run as an independent?
All right.
And I'll take my answer off.
Mohammed, thanks for the question. Dan Winslow.
Well, I'm very much of an independent-minded Republican. I've described myself as a libertarian-leaning Republican, and I'm proud to be a Republican. These common principles, the principles of the party of Lincoln, of freedom, respect for the individual, responsibility, opportunity, these are core values of the Massachusetts Republican Party and historically of the Republican Party, and I'm proud to be part of that, and that's why I'm running as a Republican.
Let's go to Ellen, who's calling from Somerville. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air with Dan Winslow.
Hi there. I was really disappointed when Scott Brown was in the Senate, when he was very difficult to lobby because you'd call him up and he would never take a stand ahead of time. He'd make his decision at the very last minute. So it was very difficult to lobby him. I'm just wondering if Mr. Winslow is going to take a different stand at that, and would he be more forthcoming about his opinions before a vote.
Dan, of course, I want you to answer that. I'm just with regard to Scott Brown. One of the things he would often say was he really wanted to take time to read the bills before he made a decision. But Dan, there's Ellen's question for you.
Well, and I know that Senator Brown did, in fact, read the bills. He's a good friend of mine, and I respected his service here in the Commonwealth. You know, I'm not going to be a very lobbyable state senator from Massachusetts.
You'll be one of the few.
Well, I won't be because listen, the people that I care about are the voters of Massachusetts, and, you know, the special interests and the lobbyists that drive so much of the agenda in Washington. Frankly, you know, I think we need to have somebody with the integrity to go down to Washington to take a stand about what's best for Massachusetts, what's best for America. And, you know, the fact that there's this special interest or that special interest or this, you know, this campaign contribution source. You know, my record as a state legislator is one. Everybody knows where I stand on issues. I'm a leader oftentimes in new thinking and new innovation and putting new ideas on the table to solve problems. And so while I'll certainly be open-minded in the sense that I benefit from listening to points of view that are different from mine, I respect different points of view, people will know where I stand, and if they vote for me, they'll know what they're getting.
Let me ask you about an issue. 75 prominent Republicans, including Bill Weld, the former governor, and Jane Swift, today signed a legal brief arguing that gay people have a constitutional right to marry. What's your view on that? Would you sign on to that if you had the opportunity?
I would. I have a strong record of supporting equality in the state legislature. Governor Romney's chief legal counsel, obviously, when the Goodridge decision came down, my client, the governor at the time, opposed the Goodridge decision and exhausted all legal remedies available to him. And it ultimately fell to me to train the city and town clerks in Massachusetts. And we did it in a way that comported with the law, but it also comported with just basic human decency. So, for example, the marriage certificate in Massachusetts, the old form used to say bride and groom. And there were some folks that wanted us to keep bride and groom so that somebody'd have to be embarrassed about choosing who was the bride and who was the groom. Well, we changed that to Party A and Party B, not because we agreed or disagreed with the Goodridge decision. I mean, the governor clearly disagreed with it, but because, you know, look at, you know, we're all human beings. You've got to be decent to people. And I think we need more decency, more civility in public life. And that's a core value that I'm running on.
I have we literally have about a minute or so left, but there's a question from Doug from Westford. Which Supreme Court justice is the most laudable at this very moment in time? It's a good question, I think, to a former judge.
Well, really two, but Justice Kennedy is a justice that I've admired. He calls him like he sees him. He's oftentimes been the deciding factor. He's doesn't seem to be ideological. I'm always worried about judges with agendas. But another judge, and I'll she has a new book out. I've only seen the reviews on it. But Justice Sotomayor, you know, look at this story. This is the American dream personified. Hmm. You know, in the inner city, in a new immigrant family, to come up really by her bootstraps. And her capabilities, that's going to be on my summer reading. Unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to get too many leisurely reading opportunities between now and the end of the election cycle.
And Dan Winslow, finally, what can you say about your Republican opponents? I think they're still gathering signatures, but what sets you apart from them?
Well, we're going to have a good, spirited primary. I'm going to be focusing and running a different kind of a campaign where I'm trying to lay out a positive agenda for why Dan Winslow is the best choice for the Republicans and independents who want to have a new voice and a new approach to Washington's problem solving. But I respect my opponents, and I look forward to engaging in the Democratic process.
Well, Dan Winslow, thank you for coming in today. We appreciate it, and we wish you luck, and we look forward to covering this campaign. I'm sure it's going to be a spirited one. It'll be fun to cover it.
Great. Thank you, Anthony.
Dan Winslow, Republican State Representative from Norfolk and a candidate for the U.S. Senate here in Massachusetts. Stay with us. Coming up, author Scott Haas's new book takes us behind the swinging door at Chef Tony Ma's popular restaurant, Craigie on Main. Stick with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.